I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. President Obama's executive orders on immigration have been blocked by a federal judge in Texas. Late Monday, the judge found that the president's plans to defer deportation for millions of undocumented immigrants would place an undue burden on the states. President Obama announced his plans to grant reprieves back in November, primarily for the undocumented parents of U.S. citizens. Here in Maryland, an estimated 55,000 people would have been eligible for the program. In this hour, is President Obama's plan an example of executive overreach? How do we address the needs of millions of parents who may have entered the U.S. illegally, but whose children are citizens? We'll hear from both sides on the deportation debate on Midday after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. It's the third Wednesday of the month. That means it's time for a visit from David Zurawiec, media critic of the Baltimore Sun. He'll be joining us in the second hour of our show today to talk about the Brian Williams suspension from NBC Nightly News and the announcement from Jon Stewart, host of The Daily Show, that he'll be stepping down later this year. David Zurawiec joining us in the second hour of our show. Up front, we're going to talk about immigration. On Monday, late Monday, a federal judge in Texas blocked President Obama's executive actions on immigration, which would have gone into effect this week. Back in November, the president announced plans to defer deportations for some undocumented immigrants, specifically those who came here as children and those who are the parents of U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents. The president's actions would have temporarily shielded an estimated 4 million people from deportation, including an estimated 55,000 here in Maryland. What happens next is not clear. Earlier this year, House Republicans passed a bill to tie funding for the Department of Homeland Security to language that would undo the president's plans on immigration. Funding for the department runs out at the end of this month. So today we're going to try to unpack all this for you, take a look at what President Obama's plans would have done and may still do as the administration has vowed to appeal this judge's ruling. Among our guests today, we'll be speaking with Ira Melman of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, an organization that opposes President Obama's plans. We'll also speak with Elizabeth Alex, who is regional lead organizer for Casa de Maryland, the Latino advocacy organization that have been working with people who are eligible for this program, getting them ready to apply for it. And also Gustavo Torres, the executive director of CASA, will be joining us in just a few minutes. But we start off the show with my colleague from the Baltimore Sun, John Fritzy, who's been covering this story, the president's plans and its effect, the effect it would have had on many undocumented immigrants here in Maryland. John, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with the judge's order. Folks might be wondering, two things. What did President Obama's action do? What would it have done? And what does this injunction mean? So let's go over that first.
Right. Well, there's two parts to what Obama announced in November. The first is an expansion of the so-called DACA program. This is a deferred action for childhood arrivals. These are the so-called dreamers, young people, for the most part, brought to this country by relatives. And the first part of what Obama did was he expanded that program, and it essentially allowed people who came here a little bit later to apply for relief, deferred deportation, so they wouldn't be deported, and they could get papers to work legally. That provision was estimated to affect couple hundred thousand people, two to 300,000 people nationwide, and about 5,000 people in Maryland. And then there's a new provision that he unveiled in November, and that is dealing with, as you say, the parents of folks who are here illegally. So the parents of legal residents or citizens would also be allowed to apply for the same sort of protection, a deferral of any deportation and the ability to work in the country legally. That provision, depending on whose estimates you look at, would affect 3.7 to 4, maybe a little bit more, million people nationwide and about 55,000 people in Maryland. It's important to note that these estimates are very much estimates. It's really hard to get a sense for the population, and these estimates look at how many people may be eligible, not necessarily how many people will apply.
Right. And in your story today, you attribute the Maryland estimate of 55,000 to a Washington-based group, Migration Policy, the Migration Policy Institute. And one last thing on eligibility, as John was just going over that, for the DAPA program, this Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residents, they would have required to have been in this country, let's see, continuously since January 1st, 2010, have no serious crimes on their record, and be a parent of a U.S. citizen or other legal resident. So governors and attorneys general from more than 20 states went to a judge, a federal judge down in Texas, and said, this is overreach by the president of the United States. We have to put a stop to this, and that's what this judge did. Tell us about the injunction, John.
Yeah, so the judge actually isn't dealing with the constitutional issues per se. What the opinion deals more with was how this procedure was carried out. Of course, the president acted unilaterally here after several years of Congress not acting on immigration. His argument is that, look, if you guys are upset about this, Congress should do something about it. And so he acted unilaterally. And what the judge is dealing with in this decision is really more of a technical, procedural issue with whether notice was given and people had a chance to weigh in publicly on this executive action that the president has taken. The administration argues, look, we don't have to do that. This is not an agency rule per se, and we don't feel like we had to do that. And so, you know, it's important to note that the judge really isn't dealing with the constitutional issues here. It's more of a technical thing. But this is going to be a fight. Obama, the president, and the White House have to decide how they want to appeal this, where they want to appeal it. The Fifth Circuit, which would be the Court of Appeals in this district, is a conservative circuit. And I think he may face trouble there as well. And it ultimately will probably be decided by the Supreme Court. The real question is what sort of happens in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Fifth Circuit stay this district decision? In other words, does the Fifth Circuit allow these applications to start coming in and this program to begin, or is it actually delayed for an unknown amount of time? You know, it was interesting that this decision came just about a day before the federal government was set to begin accepting applications for one of the programs, the one for the expanded children. And so there were a lot of folks out there who were gathering paperwork, preparing to apply, who have now been put on hold.
Now, John, take us into the weeds here a little bit on the Republican Congress, the Department of Homeland Security, and the connection to this story, the president's actions on immigration.
Right. So before the court's decision late Monday, we all kind of found out about it on Tuesday, there was this brewing fight going on Capitol Hill about Department of Homeland Security funding. Last fall, Congress agreed to fund the government, thus avoiding a showdown through the end of this fiscal year, which mm-hmm. is around end of September, except for the Department of Homeland Security. And Republicans held the Department of Homeland Security back because they wanted to find a way to roll back these immigration actions that the president proposed. They're really not happy with this executive action, and so they held back Department of Homeland Security. Fast forward to now, and the Department of Homeland Security is about to run out of money, will at the end of the month. It would go under a partial shutdown, essentially, without this funding bill. And Republicans want to use the funding bill that's in play for Department of Homeland Security to deal with this immigration issue. Democrats in the Senate don't want that. They're not letting Republicans do it. They are united, and the Republicans simply don't have the votes to do what they want to do. And you know, you can, you know, no matter what your political persuasion, no matter how you view this argument, you have to sort of acknowledge that the Republicans have put themselves in a corner here. By once again tying a policy issue to a funding bill. And so Republicans, centrist Republicans, are worried about DHS being shut down and the political ramifications of that and being blamed for that. But at the same time, they have constituents, particularly in conservative districts, who really dislike what the president has done, and will not be happy if Republicans, quote unquote, cave in. And so that's sort of the rock and the hard place that Republicans find themselves in.
And the president, and the president,
there's no. Go ahead.
I was going to say the president also between a rock and a hard place in terms of the legality of his action and his appeal to the Fifth Circuit and then the Supreme Court. This might be tough for the administration.
Well, it's particularly tough because I think Obama sees this as something about his record and his legacy, and he has dealt obviously with bad relations on Capitol Hill for most of his presidency, and I feel like what they've tried to do is take steps to go around Congress on any number of things, on this, on health care, on climate change. And so I think he views this and these some of these executive actions he's taken as part of his legacy. And so I think he views it as very important. The administration views it as very important in that regard. But, the thing about the bill is that it's not clear to me what the answer is here. I think most people... it's not clear what the answer is. Usually at this point, you start seeing some negotiation going on. It's not happening, and the days are certainly ticking down. There's some argument that this court decision may give some cover to Republicans, right? They could say, right. Well, look, the courts are going to take care of this, so we should just pass a clean bill without these immigration provisions and move on. I think that's an optimistic view. I think that's unlikely. I think, if anything, this court decision has hardened positions on Capitol Hill, and it will make it harder for the Democrats and Republicans to find some middle ground.
John Fritzie, thank you so much for your time today and explaining all that to us.
Thanks.
Yep, John Fritzie of the Baltimore Sun covers Congress for the newspaper. Now we turn to Gustavo Torres, Executive Director of Casa de Maryland, the advocacy group here in Maryland that has been working to get people who are eligible for these programs lined up and prepared to apply for them. So, Gustavo, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah. You must be very disappointed, but I need to ask those in your world who work closely with undocumented immigrants, were expecting this kind of decision out of the Texas circuit?
Yes, we were expecting that decision. Actually, John described that very, very well. I just want to add a couple of things. We were expecting that decision because we knew who was the judge who was ready to make that. It was a Bush appointee judge in the district court in Brownsville, in Texas. Very anti-immigrant judge. He has been doing that in the past. So it was not a surprise for us, the decision that came from him. But regardless of the decision of a couple of days ago, we are urging the hundreds of thousands of immigrants across our region that qualify to continue to collect their documents and become prepared for the moment when this temporary decision is overturned. We truly believe that that is going to be overturned because we have the law and the history in our side. So that is the reason why we believe that we are going to be victorious.
What is the history, Gustavo? Tell us about that part of it.
Well, for the last 50 years, each one of the presidents have been providing this kind of relief to immigrant community for 50 years. So it's very clear that the federal government have the authority and the power to execute these kind of decisions. It's not the state decision, it's the federal government. The president have all of the authority to do it. But in addition to that, the history tells this is a beautiful country of immigrants, that we make contributions every single day to make sure that our country become the greatest country of the world. So that is the reason why we believe that our history and the laws are with us.
So you have confidence that this is going to be upheld, the president's executive actions will be upheld by the courts. It may even be the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. Today we ask and urge the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals to take up this case immediately to address the millions of real people living in limbo. And you know, we have a lot of examples of this kind of decisions, how that impacts the life of real people. We have examples right over there in Baltimore of people who live right over there who are waiting for this to be able to legalize, to be able to keep paying taxes, to be able to integrate in the society. And now with this decision, everything is in hold. That is the reason why we are asking people, let's go and keep collecting the documents. Let's go and keep collecting all of the information, because this is a temporary decision that is going to be overturned.
You know, Gustavo, I just want to interject something here, get your comment on this. It occurs to me that this is another example of a case where the president, President Obama, can't win. You know, his administration, you know very well, his administration has deported thousands of people over the last 6 years. I mean, the last estimate I saw was 200,000 and maybe more than that during the Obama administration. But so here he proposes deferring deportation for a select group, albeit 4 million people, but we're talking about 11.3 million in total. So here's the president on one side deporting people who, you know, the Immigration Service says doesn't belong here, might have committed a crime even. And on the other side, he's asking for a break for those who have been here for a while, have raised kids, been here for at least, 5 years now.
That is
correct. So I mean, you do acknowledge that this president has been working both sides of this. He's been upholding, for those who say he's not upholding the law, he has been when it comes to deportations.
I just want to clarify the number. It's not 200,000, it's 2 million.
It's all right.
Immigrants have been deported
Thank
under
you.
This administration. This is unbelievable.
I'm glad you clarified that. Yeah.
No, absolutely. It's the president who have been deported more immigrants than anybody else in the history of this country. So he make a decision and say, enough is enough. I have been deported people who are honest, people who are paying taxes, people who are making a contribution to this nation. So he make a decision that he is going to stop the deportation of those people who, listen to this, who already have kids who are U.S. citizens. That's it. No more. The rest of the people could be deported. So we speak about between 4 to 5 million people,
wow.
People who have kids who are U.S. citizens. So that is the reason why we believe that it's totally unacceptable that we don't have comprehensive immigration reform. The president make the right decision. I believe that he has the power. I believe that he has the authority to do it. And right now we need to think about the families who are going to be impacted by this decision. Families who are right over here in our city, in our state, in our country, making a great contribution to this society.
Gustavo, thank you for adding a zero to my number there, from 200,000 to 2 million. Gustavo Torres is executive director of Casa de Maryland. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the invitation. Have a nice one.
You too. All right, we're going to take a short break here. We welcome calls and comments about this. 410-662-8780. Do you see any way out of this? Do you think this is a good plan that the president has put forward? Do you think it's not a good plan? Do you think it's an abdication of enforcement of the law to grant these reprieves? Do you have any experience with immigrants, undocumented immigrants in Maryland? We welcome your phone calls. 410-662-8780. Someone who has a lot of experience with immigrants will be joining us, Elizabeth Alex, regional lead organizer for CASA, Casa de Maryland. And we're also going to speak with Ira Melman of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, which opposes the president's plans. Your comments are welcome. 410-662-8780. I trust Gustavo Torres on that number, and now I've checked it. Let's see. The Pew Research Center does a tally on deportations of immigrants, reporting last fall that in fiscal 2013, I guess they tabulated for that season, for that year, the Obama administration deported 438,421 unauthorized immigrants in that fiscal period. And the total in the Obama administration is, as Gustavo Torres said, more than 2 million now. So just to make that point, and I'm sorry I was off on that, but I'm glad I was corrected. Elizabeth Alex is joining us now, regional lead organizer for Casa de Maryland. She's been on our show before to talk about immigrants here in our state. Elizabeth, nice to have you back on the show.
Thanks so much.
And Ira Melman is joining us from the Federation of American Immigration Reform, which opposes President Obama's executive action to defer deportations. Ira Melman, thank you for joining us on the Midday Show.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to start with Elizabeth and just ask her what's been going on the last, you know, 3 months or the last couple of weeks in preparation for this, because I guess you had anticipated people were going to be able to start applying. So what's been going on in our community in the last few weeks in this regard?
Yeah, so beginning, I guess, in late December, CASA's been holding information sessions with the community to help folks understand who qualifies, what the requirements are, what the paperwork is that they should start collecting now. We've been doing them throughout the region, and here in the Baltimore area, we've had over 1,800 people come to one of those sessions. And people are ready. People are excited, and they're beginning to move forward. Now, we also had a thought that this court case might come down in this direction, so we're also sort of launching an aggressive communications campaign with our membership and with immigrants throughout the region that they should not be deterred, that they should continue to prepare to get their documents ready, to not pay a fraudulent notario, but get their documents ready. Get ready, because this is only a temporary setback. We will prevail.
So there's two groups there, as John Fritzi described. Mm-hmm. One is the expansion of the Dreamers. That was the first deferment that the president ordered, right,
mm-hmm.
of children.
Correct.
Who were, what? Have been in the country for how long, for a certain period or a certain age?
Correct. Children who came here before the age of 16 and who came here prior to 2010.
Right.
The original limit had been 2007. So there's that sort of three-year window of kids who had come a little bit later but still did arrive as children.
And then the parents who have been in the country since January 1st, 2010.
Correct. And that program was slated to start in late May.
Okay, so of the two groups, then I guess the first group you were treating or helping were students, young people.
So we were talking to everybody all together
parents
in,
as well.
In this area. The parents are the vast majority of the folks, but we did have a number of Dreamers who were ready to apply today.
Let me go to Ira Melman and hear from you, Ira, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Tell us what you oppose in this plan and what you propose in terms of immigration reform.
Well, you know, first of all, what we oppose is amnesty for people who violate our laws. We have to remember the reason we have immigration laws in the first place. It's not because we want to be mean and keep people out. We understand immigration always benefits immigrants. Nobody comes here unless it's in their interest to be here. But the reason the United States and every nation on earth has immigration laws is because we understand that what might be in the individual interest of a person in another country to come here doesn't necessarily serve the best interests of people in this country. People who are looking for jobs, people who are looking for educational opportunities, it affects their lives profoundly as well, and that's why we have to have laws and enforce them. Now, look, we obviously have 12 million or so people living in the United States illegally. We're not going to deport them all. Nobody is seriously suggesting that that's the way out of this conundrum. But what we need to do is implement policies that make it clear to people that they're not going to be rewarded for breaking our laws. We need to impede them from being able to get jobs and access to non-essential, non-emergency benefits and services. Look, people come here for very rational reasons. They believe that if they get to the United States, they're going to be able to get jobs. They're going to be able to get access to certain benefits and services, that the president might decide to give them all amnesty. What we need to do is start turning back some of those expectations and relying on people to act rationally. If we make it clear you're not going to benefit, fewer people will come, and more will decide to go home. We're never going to have zero illegal immigration. There's no law made by man or God that has 100% compliance, and this is not going to be the exception. But the choices aren't between mass deportation and mass amnesty. It is rational policies that convince people to obey the law.
Ira, does FAIR believe that most people under those circumstances, if those were the circumstances, couldn't get jobs, certainly couldn't get amnesty, would be discouraged and self-deport?
Well, what we saw at the very end of the Bush administration, after President Bush was rebuffed in his effort to pass an amnesty bill, because nobody believed that they'd enforce the law, they actually went out and started enforcing the law for the last 18 months or so. This was before the recession. And for the first time in anybody's memory, the number of people living in the United States illegally actually declined. Then you had the severe recession, and the jobs dried up. And again, people responded rationally. Fewer people came, more decided to go home. Again, the numbers dropped. So, you know, it is irrelevant to illegal aliens why the jobs aren't there. Whether the government is enforcing the law or the economy is tanking, if the jobs aren't there, they're going to respond in a rational manner. And again, as I said, we're never going to have zero. There's always going to be some level of illegal immigration in the country. But we don't have to tolerate the kind of chaos that we have now. And we don't need to do something radical like round everybody up and deport them, which is simply not going to happen. And it shouldn't happen.
Elizabeth.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. Some of the rhetoric that Ira is speaking is very similar to the arguments that were put forward in the Texas case, where states that had very few undocumented immigrants were trying to put forward a case that it was an economic hardship for their state to have folks go through this process. But I think it's interesting, you know, here in Baltimore and in the state of Maryland, both our mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and our attorney general, Brian Frosch, signed on to the amicus brief. On the other side,
right.
Saying that actually immigrants are a boon to our local economy and they're of value to us here locally, not just for intrinsic reasons as human beings and families, but also for our local and state economy. You know, the mayor has made no secret about the fact that she really believes immigrants are a critical component of growing our city, growing our economy, growing our small businesses.
But what do you say when people say, as Ira just did, you know, the law is the law. You can't abdicate your duty to enforce the law in the United States. I mean, do you have that problem where what part of illegal don't you understand sort of ends the conversation? Or Elizabeth, what do you say to people when they bring that to you?
Well, you know, I think we go back to that 2 million number, right? So President Obama ran on this campaign promise of passing a comprehensive immigration bill, finally, that would address all these different components. Unfortunately, he got confronted with a Congress that was not cooperative. And even though a bill that nobody liked, an actual compromise bill, passed the Senate, that bill again stalled in the House. And so he waited until essentially the last minute to do what he could do, not to pass a law. And I would like to clarify that point. This is a policy. This is executive action. This is not a law. In the absence of congressional action.
But what about that? Let me ask Ira about that. Yeah, we can't seem to get anywhere here. And actually, President George W. Bush couldn't get anywhere with this either. So, so you still find that what the president has done is unreasonable in light of the politics of Washington?
Well, you know, first of all, there's nothing in the Constitution that says if the president gets frustrated with the Congress that he has the authority to simply act on his own. Look, I mean, if we applied that logic, you know, every president since George Washington could have gone rogue. They've all been frustrated by Congress that didn't pass laws that they wanted them to pass. But, you know, what we're not advocating enforcing laws for the sake of enforcing laws. You know, this is not the law of the law. As I said before, the law has a very good reason. It is there to protect the interests of the American workers, American taxpayers. And, you know, immigrants very often provide substitutes for American workers. You know, if the economy in Maryland could be growing by inducing workers from other parts of the United States to come, we're not talking about substituting workers here. We're talking about giving opportunities to the American people to build the economy, to grow the economy. We have millions of people out of work in the United States. You know, the unemployment rate doesn't reflect the true unemployment in the United States. We have probably upwards of 20 million people who are either working involuntarily part-time or have dropped out of the labor force. We have millions more who are available. Those are the people that our policies ought to be focusing on, not bringing in more workers to compete. And also, you know, this idea that the Obama administration has been, you know, enforcing the law and deporting people. Jay Johnson, testifying before Congress last year, admitted that the vast majority of the people that they are deporting are it's actually people that they're catching at the border, transferring custody to ICE so ICE can get credit for the deportation. The chances of being deported from the interior of the United States, unless you are a violent criminal, are virtually nil.
All right. That's a reference to the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Jed Johnson. Elizabeth Alex.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond a little on the economic argument. And I think this is one we hear frequently, and the American people are starting to realize that it is, in fact, rhetoric, that it's not an argument with a valid base. Because where we see this argument tends to be in places where there are not a large number of undocumented immigrants. And then in areas like Baltimore, where we see growing communities of mixed status families that have some undocumented immigrants, some citizens, some other folks, we see smart politicians like our mayor recognizing that, oh, actually, these folks are very likely to open small businesses. And that family, when they open their business, then they're providing jobs for another 5, 10, 15 people. And that's the small engine that keeps our local economies growing. And I think smart politicians around the country and voters are starting to see this. National polls have consistently been showing that American people don't want to keep having this debate. They want to move forward, pass some comprehensive legislation. Let's get these people out of the shadows and get to work.
And Ira Melman, on your side of this, I assume you think this judge's ruling on Monday was correct in Texas. Do you believe that this opinion will prevail through the courts if the administration even takes it to the Supreme Court?
Yes, we do. The judge made it very clear. Although he didn't rule on the constitutionality, what he ruled on was the fact that the administration didn't put this out there for public comment before they decided to implement it. But in his opinion, he made it very clear that the president is clearly overstepping his authority as president, that he does not have unlimited discretionary authority. The judge said, he isn't just rewriting immigration policy. He's making it up as he goes along. And once we head down that road, once we establish that the president can simply make up laws, then we are heading for tyranny in this country. This is precisely why the founding fathers set up our constitutional system the way they did, because they didn't want to have a president who could simply decide on his own that he's going to ignore laws that were passed by Congress and implement laws that were never passed by Congress. Because if this president can get away with it on immigration policy, future presidents will be able to get away with doing this on other policies. So even if you agree with the president's ultimate objective on immigration policy, you have to be very, very concerned about this precedent.
Ira Melman of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR, which opposes the president's plan here. And you heard what else they think should be done in this country in terms of undocumented immigrants. Thank you very much for your time today, Ira, and your opinions.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a break here on Midday. We'll come back and take some phone calls, go right to our phone lines after a short break. So please hang in there. 410-662-8780. Dan Rodrick's here. It's the Midday Show. We'll be right back. Still ahead, Baltimore Sun media critic David Zurawiec returns for his monthly visit to Midday. We'll talk about the suspension of NBC News anchor Brian Williams for making false claims about his time covering the war in Iraq. Can his credibility ever be recovered? And Jon Stewart, host of The Daily Show, will step down later this year. How do you characterize the mark he left on television? Midday on Media with David Z after the news at 1. Here's a comment from Matt at Goucher College, who says, "While I agree with stopping deportations and with immigration reform, I believe this is a much larger issue than just immigration. The president is not a king. Congress makes the laws, and the president has to enforce them. If we allow the separation of powers to break down, it sets an extremely bad precedent." Our email address for Midday, for your comments, midday@wypr.org. Dan Rodrick's here with Elizabeth Alex, who is regional lead organizer for Casa de Maryland. We're going to take some calls here. And Elizabeth, if you have any comment on what our listeners have to say, please join in. Matt Hornbeck, principal at Hampstead Hill Academy over on the east side of Baltimore, southeast side. Matt, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me, Dan.
What did you want to say?
I just wanted to say that we have, in the 12 years I've been at Hampstead Hill, hundreds and hundreds of families who are Latino, and that the booming Latino population in the southeast is an extraordinary, not only economic engine, but just terrific for Baltimore. And I applaud the mayor in supporting immigration policies in Baltimore City, and for signing on with the 23 mayors that are addressing this temporary delay as a result of what happened in Texas, and that the children and families. If you've been in states or cities that have significant numbers of immigrant families, you see, and we see at the school level, enormous value in their participation in our economy, our schools, and huge as a community. I cannot tell you how much this community, the Latino community, values education and wants to contribute. And so I hope from the very front lines that the politicians get the get everything figured out so we can move forward and families and kids can feel settled as they further their education here in Baltimore City.
Did you hear from some parents or students in the last couple days?
Absolutely. Yes, we've had emails and phone calls, and this morning there was a delay because of the Arctic temperatures. And but at 10 o'clock, when school started, we have roughly 350 families who are Latino, and we had a couple of dozen come want to try to talk about what it means and when that's going to when it's going to get settled. CASA has been a big partner in helping us communicate with our families and providing workshops and talking with us, and so Mr. Torres and Ms. Alex have really done an extraordinary job, along with Trent Learman down here in Southeast, keeping the community informed. Just to give you a sense, Dan, of the numbers, 12 years ago, Hampstead Hill was 3% Hispanic, and now it's 37% Hispanic, and that's even with us doubling our overall numbers in size. And so people think of Baltimore City as black and white in many respects, and it's increasingly Hispanic as well. And these are just wonderful families that we need to figure out how to welcome to Baltimore, not have them feel ill at ease.
Matt Hornbeck is the principal of Hampstead Hill Academy in Southeast Baltimore. Thank you very much for calling in. Elizabeth, before I go to the next call, that's a big number. That's a lot of growth, obviously, in Latino. Where are those folks from? Are they from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras?
Baltimore has a very diverse Latino population and, of course, an even more diverse, broader immigrant population. Within the Latino community, about a little less than half are from Mexico. We are seeing an increase, especially of young Central American folks, and also from South America, from Peru and Ecuador.
Because we had a surge from Central America back in the summertime.
From Honduras, yeah.
Margie and Frederick, we welcome your comments next on Midday. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I just think we've really lost a sense of humanity in our culture. In Frederick, we also have a growing Latino community. And a lot of these families do work that I know people that I know, especially in the younger generation, don't want to do. And these are families, and this summer, or this fall actually, I read a book called The Distance Between Us, which was Maryland's one book for last year by Reina Grande, and it really opened my eyes to the issues that immigrants face, illegal or not, the work that the families go through to try to give their families a better life. And I think if we boil it down to we're all humans, we're all members of the same race, you know, the human race, We truly need to stop with the rhetoric of, you know, the president's going rogue. They all go rogue. You know, that's been said over and over. And some of the hatred I hear spewed is just, it really just chills me to the bone, because I just feel that we need to care more for each other as people.
Thank you for your comments, Margie. Thanks for calling in. 410-662-8780 is the number of Midday here. We're talking about this ruling by the judge on Monday down in Texas. This is Judge Andrew Hanen, federal district court judge in the Southern District of Texas, ruling that the president overstepped his bounds here with this order and put an injunction on it. One aspect of this, it was argued by the government that it was proper for the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security to establish priorities for prosecution, instructing enforcement agents to concentrate on deporting terrorists and gang members, for instance, instead of family members who are employed. The judge rejected that argument that those changes were a proper exercise of prosecutorial discretion. He ruled that the administration had engaged in a, quote, complete abdication of enforcement. The Department of Homeland Security, he wrote, cannot enact a program whereby it not only ignores the dictates of Congress, but actively acts to thwart them. And just one last thing here. This judge sort of showed his hand back in August, according to the New York Times. And in some ruling, at some stage in this case, he accused the Obama administration of adopting a, quote, deportation policy that was an open invitation to the most dangerous criminals in society, end quote. That's from the judge who made this ruling on Monday. Back to the phone lines. Alana in Baltimore, you're up next. Hi.
Hi. So I'm a resident of Southeast Baltimore, and I just wanted to say that as someone who's come from a long line of Irish and, you know, Scottish immigrants in the United States, that, you know, as a country, we've always been welcoming to new swaths of immigrants coming in and also economically gaining from that. In addition, along the border, there's always been migration throughout centuries prior to the United States even becoming a country. And businesses on this side of the border have always capitalized from using that human labor to their advantage. Almost, you know, everything from human trafficking to we saw, like, rights of farm workers being violated all throughout United States history up until the present day. In addition, like, I'd like to really emphasize the fact that regardless of family status, and I work with a lot of, like, mixed status families as well as youth and, you know, residents in my neighborhood that are just, you know, they live next to me and they're contributing members to where I live.
Can I ask you a question, Alana?
Yeah.
What happens if you ever get into a conversation with someone who says what I said earlier? What part of illegal don't you understand? Which is, I frequently hear this when this subject comes up from readers of my newspaper column, listeners of this show who say, you're rewarding lawbreaking by granting amnesty, basically, to suspending or deferring these deportations. So is that a conversation stopper for you, Alana, or do you engage people who say that?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I would challenge them to say that, you know, the reason why we, in addition, see so many people wanting to come to the United States is that it's a direct result of U.S. foreign policy. Like, the fact that we saw a spike in children but also people coming from Central America has a lot directly to do with, you know, La Mara Salvatruca is a gang that was created in L.A. and, you know, furthered by the fact that we deported those main members back to El Salvador, and they were able to take root up there and build their power structure from there and impact families and, you know, rural, like, working class people in those countries. So, you know, when we talk about illegal, you know, we've got a lot to own up to on this side of the border as well.
Okay.
And just being such a powerful country that I think that we owe it to the families that we've directly impacted through our foreign policy to kind of look deeper at that issue instead of saying these are just lawbreakers and criminals.
Alana, thank you for your comments. Comments from now from Christopher by email, who says, we have entire generations that are coming up now feeling entitled. And a lot of immigrant workers, undocumented or not, are doing jobs that naturalized American citizens feel that they are too good to be doing. Labor jobs, construction jobs, warehouse jobs, and kitchen jobs. I can't tell you how many times I've heard people tell me that they won't do work like that because it's beneath them. Another comment. This is Zach in Baltimore. Go right ahead, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Dan. Can you hear me or do I have to take you off this? All right. Yeah, I agree with Alana especially, and as well as the principal that called in earlier. What disturbs me is this has become such a partisan issue. I think a lot of it has to do with just dysfunction in our political system. The Republican camp is so against anything that President Obama does. They talk about following the laws. You have to follow the laws. We had a law enacted that they've been trying to repeal 57 times.
Yeah, and that's what I said. This is another one of those can't win for Obamas, and I was corrected. I thought the administration had deported 200,000. It's more than 2 million now. So on one hand, they are deporting people who shouldn't be here. under the law. And on the other hand, they're saying, Elizabeth, they're saying, we're going to give a break to some people who's in the case of children, the Dreamers, they really had no choice in it. And parents who, you know, they've come here, they've started to raise families here. A lot of them are employed. As long as they haven't been, convicted of a crime or accused of a crime, they're eligible for this program.
Convicted.
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond a little on the partisan nature of this. And I think, you know, people think, this is a major court decision. And I want people to know very carefully, and you referenced this earlier, Dan, this was a very carefully calculated move and not really a legal strategy, but more of a partisan political strategy, right? All of the governors and all but one of the attorney generals that signed on to the court case
are
Republicans.
Right.
They shopped around to find the right judge who already had the correct leaning on this issue, who had already been outspoken against immigration. I think there's no accidents here. This is very purposeful and very partisan. I do think it's going to end up hurting the GOP in the long run. But I think we need to be, go into this with our eyes open, that this is not accidental.
The other part we didn't talk about, we talked about it a little bit, is this connection with the Department of Homeland Security and funding for it at a time when the president is asking Congress for authorization to continue his war against the Islamic State, when there's this great concern around the world, including now in Europe more than ever, with terrorism, right? So I don't know how the GOP looks here. If there's actually get to the end of the month, and the story becomes we're not funding the Department of Homeland Security established after 9/11. Michelle Mendez is an immigration attorney giving us a ring. Thank you for holding, Michelle. Welcome to our show.
Thanks, Dan.
What did you want to say?
Yeah. So my comment is really in response to Ira's mention of rule of law. And what needs to be known is that prosecutorial discretion has really strong roots in the immigration realm. In fact, there was something back when the INS was in place as opposed to DHS called the non-priority program. And it was revealed by the INS in 1975. Incidentally, it was a lawsuit involving John Lennon and Yoko Ono. A lot of details in that, people can look it up for themselves. But basically, that non-priority program was what we had first seen through a FOIA request that John Lennon's attorney had made, and the disclosures that came from that FOIA request saw the non-priority program and who it benefited. And in fact, that non-priority program, prosecutorial discretion that was in place, helped a lot of folks who even had drug convictions, criminal convictions that would never pass muster in any type of PD or prosecutorial discretion requests that come about now under these current programs.
So you're saying institutionally there's been discretion over deportations for 40 years.
For a very long time. There are very strong roots in immigration and in the executive branch. And what's very sad to me to see is that the taxpayers from these states that have brought this lawsuit and have forum shopped very, very well are the ones that are going to pay the bill. And I'm not sure if the listeners know about all the failed immigration, anti-immigration litigation in various states across the country. But this is just yet one example of it that ultimately, yes, we do think it will fail. But at the end of the day, who is paying for these litigation measures? The taxpayers. So it's very funny that, you know, we talk about, resources, undocumented immigrants taking resources, and the resources that the states will have to use to give driver's license, et cetera, to these folks, when by and large, all of the statistics have shown that the benefits, the financial benefits, vastly outweigh any of the costs.
Michelle, I'm glad you called in. Michelle Mendez, who is an immigration attorney. Thank you very much. Your message to people out there who know someone or are undocumented and have been thinking about this program, Elizabeth, even though there's been this court ruling, you're saying, come in and see us anyway at CASA.
Yep, come in, start getting ready. Don't let this deter you. This is one step back, but we will ultimately prevail. It's just a matter of time. And so folks need to be ready.
Has this been consuming most of your time in the last few months as a lead organizer here in Baltimore?
This has been our primary focus, yes.
Yeah, and a lot of parents this time, you said.
Yeah, like I said, over 1,800 people have come through our information
sessions. Most of them parents.
Most of them parents, yeah. Some older children.
Thank you very much for coming in to talk about this. Again, Elizabeth Alex is regional lead organizer for Casa de Maryland. That's the first hour of midday. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everybody who contributed to that hour with the phone calls and emails. If I didn't get to your emails today, I will read them on Friday. I have reserved some time on Friday's show to catch up on our listener mail. So thanks very much. Stay tuned. We've got another hour of midday coming along. David Zerowick, the media critic of the Baltimore Sun, will be here for his monthly visit. We'll be talking about the Brian Williams suspension from NBC Nightly News and also Jon Stewart's announcement that he's done with the Daily Show at the end of this year after 16 years. We're going to take a break here for lunch and then the news from NPR. And we'll see you. Please stick around for the second hour of our show.